one of the 50 greatest players of all time, joining the show to talk about his new book. And we open up level two of our NBA Levels project, where we might find LeBron James, we will find Kawhi Leonard, all that and more on this episode of The Good Word. Welcome to The Good Word, y'all. My name is Vincent Goodwill, and we are on the Yahoo Sports Ball Don't Lie Network. You can get us wherever you get your podcast, and of course, we are on YouTube. We've got a special show for you guys today. In a little bit, we're going to talk to my Yahoo Sports compadre, Jake Fisher. We're going to hit on level two of our NBA Levels project, something I've been looking forward to as we begin to conclude and get to the highest of the high levels. But first, this is a special interview. I talked to the Iceman Cookin. I talked to Detroit native, Naismith Basketball Hall of Famer, top 75, top 50, George Gervin. The Iceman talked about his Eastside Detroit roots. He talked about how he feels about the NBA Players Association. He talked about why he does not regret going and playing with the Los Angeles Lakers toward the end of his career, as well as the ABA-NBA merger. It's a lot of good stuff in there. He's promoting a book called Why I Was Born to Score. So let's get right to it. Joining us now on the show, this is a huge, huge honor for me. He's a member of the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. He's a member of the College Basketball Hall of Fame. He's a member of the NBA's Top 50 and Top 75. He's a nine-time All-Star, a four-time scoring champ. He is a charter member of the ABA, NBA, the way that you see the game play today, the style and the way that the game is performed. A lot of it has to do with this man. He is a Detroit native, the one and only George, the Iceman Gervin. George, how you doing this morning?
Hey, man, doing good, man. I like that intro, man. That, wow, you ran that down.
I felt like I got to give you all of the flowers at this particular stage, especially if those who don't know, or you will know, George has a book coming out on Halloween called Ice, Why I Was Born to Score. And George, I want to start with the East Side of Detroit. We are both products of the East Side of Detroit. What was that scene like back then? You know, there was St. Cecilia's, and for people who don't know, St. Cecilia's was like the Rucker Park of Detroit. It was this old church on the west side of Detroit where some of the best basketball games you could ever see were going to be played, pros, non-pros, people like George before George became famous. But just on the east side of Detroit, what was that basketball scene like back then that helped sort of give you the foundation?
Well, it was a special place. It's a special place for basketball in Detroit. You know, if you can go there and play and entertain, it gave you the confidence and the self-esteem that you can go play anywhere in the world. You know, the setting, you know, where you only had bleachers on one side of the gym. You know, it was a cracker box, you know. So, you know, you only can hold so many there. But it used to fill up, man. I mean, and anybody that was anybody played in St. Cecilia. You know, right now they great go through a renovation to reestablish it. And I'm so proud to hear that there, you know, Derek Coleman and the chapter down there is a big part of that. So, you know, playing there, man, for me, you know, it's really one of the highlights of my young career and as a pro.
Yeah, it's funny. If you grew up on one side of town, let's just say you grew up on the east side of Detroit and you are a child of a certain age, you heard your parents, your uncles, your dad talk about this guy named Ice, who did not have the nickname Ice back then. George, I thought the nickname Ice was something that Detroiters gave you. In the book I read, and of course verified by all of my uncles and my dad, who I thought were lying when they said they didn't give you the nickname, you came up with that moniker, as the word says, to help you keep cool. What made you do that?
Well, you know, if you think about where it really came from, because, you know, when I was in Detroit coming up, I was Twig. you know. But when I went and played in the Virginia Squires, Fatty Taylor is the one that started calling me Ice. You know, he would really kind of call me Iceberg Slim. You know what I mean? We know who Iceberg Slim is.
Yeah, yeah.
You're an East Sider. You know, everybody ain't going to know, but, you know, we know.
We know.
And I didn't, you know, Iceberg Slim was pimp, you know, and I wasn't nothing pimpish about me. Now, I was in a, come up in the East Side, in the hood, and I knew a whole lot of them, but that wasn't me. And Fatty used to always say, man, you get 25, man, 30, man, we practice, you don't sweat, man. And he just, and my demeanor, he just started saying, man, you Ice, man. You, man, I'm start calling you Ice. So Fatty Taylor is the one start calling me Ice.
And it seemed to really, you know, really fit your game. And I remembered in the ABA that you and Dr. J play for the same team, mm-hmm. the Virginia Squires, albeit shortly, and you were kind of, you know, his rookie. And it's hard for people today to be able to contextualize Dr. J and George Gervin on the same team, even for however long or short it was going to be. What was that experience like playing with him? Because it seemed like he gave you some confidence to tell you, hey, you think I'm special, you're just as special yourself.
Man, I tell you, man, that's real special to me, too. You know, we see each other today, and he still called me Rook. Hey, how my Rook doing? You know, and I take it, man, to heart, too, man, because he helped build up my confidence as a pro. You know, when I did play with him in Virginia, and we used to practice, and after practice, he's always come and say, you know, where you going, Rook? I was going to go in and shower. He said, where you going, Rook? I said, man, I'm going on and get clean up, get out. He said, oh, no, me and you ain't done. And he used to get me, man, and me and him used to play one-on-one after practice. You know, so for me, to have that opportunity, to have that personal relationship with him, man, really gave me that confidence, man, that, wow, man, I'm playing against the Doc. Because, you know, back then, Doc was the ABA. You know, I mean, everybody in the ABA couldn't wait for him to come to that city to play. So for me to have that kind of relationship with him, man, that first week, man, Doc beat me so bad, man. And, you know, I mean, and then, you know, then it was the respect I had. And
yep.
But again, I'm from the city. So sooner or later, you know, I caught on.
Mm-hmm.
Man, we had some battles, man. I mean, we had some real, real battles, man. So I still appreciate him today, man. And I talk about him in the book, man, because he is special to me.
It's funny, when I think about the ABA, the guys I think of you, I think of Doc, I think of David Thompson, I think of those guys, you guys, rather. And then when the NBA-ABA merger happened, there was no three-point line. The game wasn't as stylish. I think, Doc, and I'm not saying it's just to flatter you, I've long believed this, that the way that the game looks, even from players in their own individual styles, off the floor to on the floor, to just the way the game, the freedom of the way the game is played now, it looks more ABA than NBA. Am I right in that?
100% right, man. You know, because the flair that we played with back in the, you know, the 70s is exactly what you see today. You know, think about it like this, man, with that three-point line and done to the game. It made it even more entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now it's a bad shot. But just think, it's a part of the game now, you know. And once Golden State won it from the three-point line, we saw the evolution of basketball.
Yep.
See, because you remember, V, when I played, the game was played inside out.
Yep.
Now the game is played outside in. You know, so we saw the evolution. I mean, now they're scoring 110, 115 points. We average 115, 112 in the ABA. So they talk about that 76 merger, you know, casually. To me, it changed the NBA. They always say Magic and Bird changed the NBA, in which they did. But in 76, they weren't around. 76, when the ABA guys came into the NBA, we changed the game. Because if you look at the 77-78 All-Star game, count how many ABA players was on the All-Star game.
That's an excellent point, George. And I feel like more, especially from like an aesthetic standpoint, the look of NBA players, once the merger happened, players felt like they could be more free. They could show their individuality. Mm-hmm. And part of it was they were emulating you guys. Like, I felt like the way it was framed was the ABA, those players wanted to get to the NBA. Like, you know what I mean? But I felt like the NBA players wanted to be you guys. They wanted to be as cool as you guys. Did you get that sense back then too?
Well, you know, I mean, that. Well, see, remember over the years now, we still played against a lot of the NBA guys. So the NBA guys knew about us.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the NBA guys knew our flair. They knew our style. They knew what we brought to the table. You know, so they was prepared. They knew. You know, you got some guys coming in here, man. If you ain't staying on top of your game, you might be going somewhere else. That's how powerful the young guys coming into the NBA was, man. And then, man, a lot of them didn't get a chance that was very dominant players in the ABA didn't get a chance to even come into, you know, the NBA. So we brought something to the game, man, it's what you see today. NBA is playing ABA kind of basketball, and whether or not they want to say it or not, if you talk to guys back in my era, they gonna tell you they playing ABA kind of basketball. So, you know, I wish that we, especially for a lot of the other guys, man, would be able to, you know, get that opportunity, man, before they gone, man, to, you know, smell flowers, man, because we are a big part of what this foundation of the NBA is today. And, you know, it's sad sometimes because a lot of my former players in the ABA just don't get the credit they deserve.
And that's on the NBA, too, a league that celebrates its history and is very good at celebrating its history. It's a blind spot for the NBA. I can say that the 76 celebration was excellent. Like, I wish I was in the room with you guys and all that type of stuff. They do excellent things there, but it is indeed a blind spot. And another blind spot, George, one could say could be the relationships between players from your generation and players today, where you guys want to be more, taking more of a mentorship role.
Yeah.
And Kevin Durant spoke in the book. He actually wrote the foreword in the book, and he talked about meeting you or seeing you first and hearing people talk about you, then meeting you and actually just hearing you soak up, you know, just listening to you and soaking up the stories of everything that you've been through in your career. You know, where's your desire come from to sort of mentor these younger guys? Because I'm sure you don't want anything from them. You just want to help.
Yeah, man. You know, I tell them all the time, too, man, I don't want nothing from you. All I want you to do is take the wisdom I give you and pass it down to another young man, you know, so we can keep going. You know what I mean? Because this is a great opportunity to play in this league, man. I mean, and so many youngsters look up to you. You know, I write in the book also about I ain't talking about the NBA. I'm talking about the NBA Player Association. I'm saying, man, y'all should have created a different kind of program to implement guys like me that been through things. You know, I done been through things in my life, you know, and you know, like I know life about recovery. You know, I mean, all of us gonna get tripped sooner or later, you know, and when you can address with these youngsters about these pitfalls, you know, and encourage them to go in another direction, I think it's so important, man, for them. Kevin make a great point. He was like a sponge. You know, I mean, he took it in, you know. The league, you know, the player association ain't figured it out yet. They doing what we did. You know, I mean, like you did what I done already done it, you know, and I could be an important asset. They got all the money in the world to create a program, man, to where they can implement us. To have an opportunity, man, to help guide these youngsters, man. And they coming in the league now younger and younger. You know, so they need more mentorship. You know, I mean, so a mentoring program, man, with ex-NBA guys, I mean, and you could be the selective. It's a lot of us out there, man, that want to be a part, because we are a part of this foundation, whether they want to give to us or not. That's how good I feel. I feel I'm a part of the foundation of this NBA, whether they tell me or not. I know I am, you know? So I wanted to stay. I wanted to continue to grow. But I get tired of seeing youngsters being tripped and don't know there's a line there that they're getting ready to walk over and be tripped on. We can help with that, you know? So I do mention that in my book, and it means a lot to me.
It does. And that's, it's like some key tent poles in your book. One is mental health. One is your relationship with spirituality. One is about, you know, bouncing back, and your relationship with your wife, Joyce. Like, those are huge parts of your book. And George, I want to spin this to something fun, because I feel like people who don't know how great you were, I feel like I need to give them like some of that. You know, when you talk about two guards, the greatest two guards to ever play the game, George is up there. It's not just Michael and Kobe, Dwayne Wade, like guys that we've all quote unquote seen in the modern era. It's Jerry West. It's you. Later on, you know, it's even, you know, Clyde Drexler, who kind of gets, you know, lost in the conversation. But George, you talked about turning down an opportunity to play with the Showtime Lakers towards the end of your career with the San Antonio Spurs. And when I was reading it, I was like, I wonder if he regrets it. And then you said, like a chapter later, you said, I don't regret it, because I would have found myself in spaces I didn't want to be in. How much time, did you know that immediately, or did it take you some time to come to that space?
I'm from an era that I love to compete, you know, and I love the challenge. Mm-hmm. You know, so the Lakers, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, Jerry Buss, my last contract, you know, Jerry Buss and Angelo Drosos was the owner of the Spurs. Before I signed a contract, he said, GG, this is the Lakers want to give up 3 first round draft picks for you to play in the Lakers. And it's up to you. I said, hey, I don't want to play with the Lakers. I want to beat the Lakers. You know, so, you know, for me, and then, you know, where my mind is, and, you know, and some of my choices to go to, I call it Solomon and Gomorrah, you know, you know, to go in that type of lifestyle wouldn't have been good for me and my family. That's what I thought about. You know, so you also read in the book that I didn't believe in winning at all costs. I don't believe in that, because it's still just a game. Because in the end, when it's all said and done, when all that's done, where you at in life? What's more important to any of us as human beings? I mean, I think it should be, and that family. I got all mine. You know, I'm married 47 years. You know, mm-hmm. I got 3 beautiful children, and I got 7 grandchildren. That's better than Hall of Fame. That's better than championships. You know, and see, we can get lost, you know, and I talk about, we can get lost in this game, you know, because I got a partner in there too that said, well, George, if you had a chance to do it all over again, would you? I say, oh, hell no. You know, and I say that more metaphorically, you know, than I do reality, because I'm older now. I'm more experienced. I done went through things and stuff. And I know how that world, man, there in the NBA and in sports, man, you can lose yourself. You know, you can get, I got another part in there to talk about idol worshipers. I mean, these young kids, man, they worship us. You don't worship a man. You don't even worship idols. You know what I'm saying? I mean, so that world, man, and entertainment, man, is, you really think about it, it ain't all what it seems.
That, my man, that is as ice cold as I can put it. I got one final question for you, because I always want to ask guys this. If I could put prime George Gervin in today's game, with the nutrition, with the three-point shot, with everything, and I could place you in any year playing on any team, where would you want to play? Who would you want to play with?
Wow, man. As I hear you talking, man, I'm a Spur. True to true. And I wouldn't want to play with nobody but the guys that I played with. You know, and I say that, man, with a whole lot of confidence. Because you had some guys that I know I would have fit in with.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I enjoyed my career, man, with the guys that I played with, man. We never won it all. We had a couple of good chances to do it. But, wow, man, I love the game of basketball, you know, and I'm satisfied with my career, V. You know, and I understand what you're saying, you know, and I don't really have a real answer because of my love for the guys that went to war with me mm-hmm. on the basketball floor, you know, and I want them to, because some of them gone and you know, a lot of them are still here, how much I appreciate playing with them.
Well, I'll give you an easy out, Ice. You could have played with the Tim Duncan, David Robinson Spurs. They could have just cleared the lane for you every now and again after you dumped it inside to them, made and fed them and made sure that they was defending the paint. They just clear the lane and you drop a 15-foot finger roll on them. That's all you had to do.
That is a good scenario, man, and stuff, man. So both of them brothers can play.
Yes, and they admire you. That's the one thing. David and Timmy both admire you. You are a huge part of the Spurs lexicon to this very day. And George does a lot of great work in the San Antonio area for underprivileged youth and in the schools and everything else. George, I greatly, greatly appreciate it. We didn't even get a chance to talk about the Iceman Cooketh. We didn't get a chance to talk about his year with Michael Jordan. There is so much in the book. You can pre-order it. Ice, Why I Was Born to Score. It was George Gervin and Scoop Jackson. The foreword was written by Kevin Durant. You can get them wherever books are sold. It comes out in 2 weeks on Halloween. Detroit's own George Gervin, the east side of Detroit's own George Gervin. Thank you so much for your time.
Hey, man, appreciate you, man. Appreciate y'all. Thank you very much.
Thank you, George. And that was great, wasn't it? I told you it was going to be great. It was one of the best interviews we've done in our short time here on A Good Word. It was clearly my favorite given my Detroit roots and George's Detroit roots. Thanks to Ice for joining us and being so generous. Now it's time to dig into level 2 of our NBA Levels project with Jake Fisher. Jake was kind enough to come back on and join me in discussing this. We both had different ballots, but we had a lot of fun in this conversation. Welcome back to another weekly installment of our Yahoo NBA Levels project. 40 names, 4 tiers. We made up the name of the tiers, and hopefully we're going to make this a yearly thing. We gave the prompt to every member of the Yahoo NBA staff, and we aggregated it onto a list. So my ballot isn't necessarily Jake's ballot, but we all stand by what everybody came up with. And we're having a big article every week that coincides with each level. This week, it is level 2, Robin's cosplaying as Batman. That's a best player on a contender or an overqualified number 2 on a championship team. Here's the list. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from OKC, Jimmy Butler from Miami, the reigning MVP, Joel Embiid, LeBron James from the Lakers, and Kawhi Leonard from the Clippers. Jake Fisher, my partner here at Yahoo Sports. Jake, where do you want to start?
I think we start with the big man in Philadelphia, the reigning MVP, Joel Embiid, who I am looking now. I did have him ranked in tier 1, But with some separation, with some time to reflect, now that we're here with the microphones on, it makes sense after years of failing to lift his team out of the second round. Quite literally years. Years that have put the Sixers fan base on edge, that have put all the stakes of all the stakeholders of this Philadelphia franchise on edge, going into a critical year where the season is considered wide open, where James Harden's trade request has lingered over the entire start of training camp, that he falls below this tier that he wants to be held accountable for. If Joel Embiid, if anything, is a very self-aware superstar in this modern social media age where you're getting feedback left and right, whether you want it or not. He wants it. He sees it. And he knows he's not done enough at this point in time to prove that he's capable of doing it. So this is another chance. This is another year where Joel Embiid can put all the doubters aside and prove every naysayer wrong that he can lift the team deep into the postseason. But so far, he has been unable to do that.
You know, this comes across really mean, but he's trending in Karl Malone territory. Great regular season player that cannot lift his game for the last 2.5-3 months. Not only that, he can't even hold the line. And it would be really hard to hold the line, mind you. He averaged 33 last year. That's a high bar. I want to say perhaps Shaquille O'Neal averaged 30 in his MVP season in 2000. Like, it's really hard to maintain that level of play and exceed it in the playoffs. But going from 33 to 23 in the postseason, shooting 43%, coming up short yet again in a situation that seems to fall in line with what happened against Miami two times, correct? What also happened against the Celtics before, what's happened against the Atlanta Hawks. Like, the Philadelphia 76ers have a high and hard ceiling of the second round of the playoffs, no matter who the coach is, no matter who the co-star is, and the consistent player that's been there has been Joel Embiid. And like you said, Jake, he's wanted to be included in the upper echelon of the NBA superstars. He torched Nikola Jokic for 50, and then we didn't see him on the second half of that. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot. There is a lot there. So for me, I have yet to see it. And because I can't see it, and I can't see it for this Philadelphia 76ers team because of everything they have going on with James Harden right now, I can't put him in level one.
It's interesting because he hasn't proven it yet. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has not proven it yet, but he hasn't had the chance to. So that's a different side of the same coin, where to me, after seeing him at Manila at the World Cup, leading Canada to their first medal in FIBA play since 1936. That's what Shai Gilgeous-Alexander did this summer. He had help from Dylan Brooks. He had help from other guys, but he had a head-to-head matchup with Luka Doncic, who, and to me, the most impressive player on the floor, the guy who was controlling the pace of tempo on both sides of the game action, even when the ball wasn't in his hands, was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He just hasn't had an opportunity yet to prove that. And to me, when we try to take these things seriously, when we put our Yahoo Sports label on it and all of our heads together, don't feel quite comfortable having him as a bona fide bus driver, if you will, when he hasn't necessarily proven himself in those stakes. But unlike Joel, he hasn't really gotten there yet.
Well, I'm higher on Shai because I feel like this is going, and this is just a projection. This season, I feel like Oklahoma City is going to be near or right at the top six. I don't think there'll be a play-in team.
I do too.
Assuming everything is health. And I feel like with what we've seen from our buddy Chet, I feel even more confident that Oklahoma City is going to be, lack of a better phrase, a surprise team. Shai has improved his scoring every year in the league, just improved his overall play, improved his efficiency. He's available. Like, he's not a 82 game a year block guy, but he played 68 games last year. There's no reason for me to think that he won't play somewhere close to 75. Availability is really important. And the thing is, he's not overly reliant on athleticism. He's almost got like a tricky game. If he weren't black, we would say all these ridiculous things. Deceptively quick and, you know, sneaky athletic. We would say all these things about Shai if he weren't black. But because he's black, we don't know how to describe his game. I just think
methodical. probing.
There we go.
Change of pace.
There we go. Plays at his own pace. And now you put him with a guy, you put him with Giddey, you put him with Jalen Williams. I feel like if Oklahoma City is going to elevate themselves to the spot that we think they could be, I think it's going to be because Shea not raises his game from a number standpoint, because I don't think you can really go too much higher, you know, from 34 and 6 assists.
His first team All-NBA. He's proven it.
Yeah. And we don't have to worry about him getting suspended. Like, we don't have to worry about him being suspended. We don't have to worry about him doing anything stupid. You know, like, there is something to just availability, which brings us to the king, LeBron James. Availability is a huge point for me, a huge plot point in how I made my selections as far as, and this is where I hit LeBron. And I thought LeBron's postseason where he played really, really well, I thought that was almost a harbinger because he was healthy and he was rested. The Lakers made their run after they made all those trades. They got Russ out of there and they balanced out their roster a little bit better. But LeBron was resting. He was resting that tendon in his foot that he had been playing through. I don't know if LeBron can be the best player on a championship team at this stage of his career. Mind you, this stage, I'm not saying he's not one of the three greatest players of all time. I'm not saying his 2013 season in Miami might have been the best non-Jordan season we've ever seen. I'm simply saying the guy who's in his 21st season, Jake, I have questions about his health. I have questions about his shooting. I have questions about defense. But I do think the Lakers can be good to great. But can LeBron put them over the top? That would be the question.
I'm curious. This is completely off topic, but not really. Who's your third greatest of all time? If LeBron's one of three, usually it's one of two. So who's your third?
My three greatest players go. Number one is Jordan. And two and three can go Kareem, LeBron, Magic. Any one of those three. To me.
So there's four names in the top three for you.
Four names, and it depends on the day.
Yeah, I think, you know, he clearly was still capable of taking Denver to the Western Conference Finals a year ago, which is something that I was skeptical. I was beating the drum on No Cap Room and other podcasts that the Lakers weren't that good. But Austin Reeves had a second half, you know, stretch, and AD was one of the best players in the whole postseason. They got there, and they get swept by the eventual champions. So it is a wonder to me.
They were the one team that didn't get a game off of the eventual champions, too.
For sure.
Mind you.
For sure. Similar respect, you know, Jimmy Butler has brought the Heat to two finals in the last 4 years. He was the player standing in the way of LeBron and the Lakers when they did win the championship in 2020 until he was not in the way any longer. I personally had Butler as a level one player. I understand why you could look at it and say he's been there twice, hasn't gotten it done. Well, I think he brought an underdog Miami team to the finals twice.
Yeah.
And they came within sniffing distance of the Lakers. I think Denver was just a superpower last season. No, as much as the league was considered to have the greatest parity we've had in decades, and it's a wide open title race. I mean, Denver was sleepwalking through the last 10 games of the regular season. That's how wide of a gap they had on the rest of their conference. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy was hurt. You had Gabe Vincent had an ankle injury. Bam Adebayo was not the real offensive force that I think it was required for him to be for Miami to have the full punch they needed to take down and spar with the Nuggets. Just because they haven't gotten it done. I know I lamented Joel Embiid for not getting out of the second round and not doing it. It's a little bit different when you bring two teams to the finals and you're just this close to getting it done. Any analytical-minded executive will tell you that winning a title is just about beating the odds. And if you're doing it, if you're bringing a team there, if you're bringing them to the doorstep of the promised land, basically every other year, I just think he deserves that shine. Maybe that's why he's a little emo at Media Day, because he knew that we were kind of not giving him all the flowers that he deserved.
I think Jimmy is a conscious troll, right? Like, I think that's the way to put it. But when you consider the last two playoff runs for Jimmy Butler, taking the Boston Celtics to seven games. If that three-pointer that he takes in the final seconds of game 7 against Boston goes in, he's in the finals two straight years. Look at, listen to these numbers, Jake. 27 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals on 48% shooting and 82 from the line. If this were any other player, I think, that put up those performances in the postseason, and that's kind of what we're doing here, is saying, how good will you be 8 months from now? He is as bankable a commodity as the NBA has had in the playoffs the last couple of years. You can say Jokic, and you can say Steph Curry, the last 2 finals MVPs, and then you say Jimmy Butler. I feel like that list is very short as far as who can raise their games. Now Jimmy Butler is 34 years old, and you're asking, can he continue to lift this motley crew, Jake, of Miami Heat players? Like, if Bam Adebayo was better, you know what I mean? Maybe we'd feel better about him being in level one, because we're saying the Heat are bona fide championship contenders and they are a legit threat to win the title. I don't think this is an indictment on the Heat, because I feel like if they had Damian Lillard, Jimmy Butler might be level one, right? Because we would say he'd be the best player on the championship team, right?
Yeah, to me, I looked at this exercise as, no matter what, this is how I'm viewing them. I understand the context you're saying, because, yeah, they would be much, you know, more regarded as a real threat to win this title. He would be the best player on that team. Yeah, the point you're making does stand. That's just not how I looked at the assignment.
Gotcha. And now the final player, who I think is the most confounding player on this entire list, a guy that I saw wreck shop for a game and a half, and then we found out that he tore his meniscus in the playoffs, Kawhi Leonard. When he's healthy, when he's right, he's not a 48-minute lockdown guy, Jake, but he can wreck your entire program on that end of the floor, and he's still a 50, 40, 90 guy who can get to his spots, that can put up 35 on any player in the league. It's just a matter of availability. And, you know, torn ACL, torn meniscus. And this is what you have to figure out when you're figuring out Kawhi Leonard, not just for now, but for the future, because old guys don't get healthier, right?
They don't. I think with Kawhi, you know, I was watching Memphis the other day, and it just really struck me how Derrick Rose has completely, we've seen it in New York, but now it's in a different jersey and he's not playing for Tom Thibodeau. To see him as a totally reinvented under the basket player, it's kind of a marvel that he was what he was 10 years ago. I wonder, when it's all said and done, will we end up looking back at Kawhi as someone more like Derrick Rose than someone who, you know, at the time of Kawhi's peak in Toronto, we were talking about him as, you know, could he end up being one of the all-time greats? But his body just potentially held him back for more. I remember one series in San Antonio with Memphis where, for, I think it was game 6, this is still in the Marcus Gasol, Mike Conley days, where the game went to overtime. Kawhi had 25 straight points or something like that over the fourth quarter and overtime. Plus, he was getting steals and like the guy was literally the best player on the floor on both sides of the floor for the entire crunch time in the fourth quarter and overtime. He single-handedly beat a top Western Conference contender. When he gets traded to Toronto, it wasn't even a doubt in his mind. He was going to lift the Raptors to the title and then bolt anyway. He's just not that player anymore from a physical standpoint. And you see glimpses of it. You know, you see those 38-point games with the Clippers where he's getting to the elbows and he's hitting his Jordan-like fadeaways and there's nothing you can do to stop him. But then it just crashes into a wall and he's not available for the rest of the playoffs. I hope that he can get back to that peak, because the NBA would be better for it. Us as watchers from afar, we would have a greater experience. He's a truly interesting character in the whole NBA soap opera, with his personality that does not necessarily match the typical superstar play on the court. I just, at this point, yeah, it is hard to count on him to be able to do that, especially when, if you're talking about the team context like we were at Jimmy, his counterpart in Paul George has the same issues as well.
Yeah.
And that's why the Clippers are in this kind of potential crossroads season where they're about to go into a new arena. These new cap rules are coming into play where it's going to be more and more punitive to be paying into the tax. That's why this whole situation is potentially in flux and potentially on the verge of a different era beginning, because these two guys just can't stay on the court.
Yeah, I think, and it's important for us to note that the 2019 version of Kawhi that took down the battered Golden State Warriors in the NBA Finals, that was not the best version of Kawhi Leonard. The 2014 version of Kawhi Leonard that was a pup who won Finals MVP in San Antonio, that was not the best version of Kawhi Leonard. The Kawhi Leonard that Jake is referring to, that 2017 sports car, who literally before Zsa Zsa Pachulia ran under his ankles in game one of the Western Conference Finals, was taking down, single-handedly taking down the Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Golden State Warriors, and the best team we've ever seen, period.
Really big hands. He was taking really big hands and tearing everything apart.
Like, bit by bit, right? He was taking down the entire Justice League, okay? He was Lex Luthor, right, with braids. And that's the player that we missed out on. That's the player that we never got to see, because from that point on, he's never been as healthy or as consistently on the floor. And his body has changed a little bit too. But this guy, the fact that he's still able at his age, I think, to be at this level, I think is a testament, as opposed to us saying, hey, why can't he be better? I'm wondering, man, is this gravy at this point? When you hear some of the things about him, maybe degenerative knee condition and everything else, like, should he actually be playing? But he is playing. It's just that he can't lift his team playing every other day for 3 months or 2 months and get them through four rounds of the playoffs. He couldn't even get them through two games of the playoffs against Kevin Durant and the Phoenix Suns. Jake, this level two, was more exclusive than level one. Do you think there's a reason for that? Do you think it's harder to identify players who are overqualified but underqualified at the same time? Or do you think it's just we have an overabundance of players who fit this?
To me, there's a lot of players who ended up in level three that I had in level two as well. And I think a lot of it's just about circumstance where, you know, Jamal Murray, for example, he's been the second best player on an NBA team. And for whatever reason, he didn't make it into this category. Devin Booker, I mean, Dame just got traded to Milwaukee to be that. Anthony Davis has done that. Donovan Mitchell, though, like Zion Williamson, Anthony Edwards, Paul George, like we talked about, Jaylen Brown, like those guys are right in that conversation. I think ultimately what happens, and Dame is the perfect example, and maybe LeBron, I mean, no, let's talk Joel. If Joel were to get traded, if Embiid were to ever request out of Philadelphia and move somewhere else, the likelihood would be that he would go to a situation where he would kind of follow the Anthony Davis mold, where he would go from being the overtasked, overburdened number one and go help someone else, or they'd go help each other. So that's kind of why I think, you know, there aren't as many teams or players in the league where you look at and you snap your fingers and say, okay, if that guy went there, those two would be a problem. So I think that's kind of where there's a little bit of an echelon difference in the general, you know, viewpoints. Obviously, I listed a couple other guys who I would have agreed would be in this tier, but I think that's kind of, if you're asking me to surmise why certain folks aren't in this category, that'd be my best guess.
And honestly, there probably aren't as many championship teams as we like to think in this age of parity. If you're listening to Level 2, that means that the Level 2 write-up is on the Yahoo Sports website. It's on the Yahoo Sports app. And next week, creme de la creme, Level 1 bus drivers.
That's all we got for you today. Thanks for Jake for talking through Level 2 with me. Thanks, of course, to George Gervin for talking about his road, his path, the ABA, the NBA, and all things ICE. You guys should check out that book, and it was a fun conversation. Thanks to producer John behind the glass. Thanks to Evan and Ron, of course, with all the videos. Don't forget to rate us, review us, let us know what you think, and especially if you are on YouTube, don't forget to leave a comment. Jake and Dan will be back with their 10 interesting players in the Western Conference on a new episode of No Cap Room later this week. Y'all, we are getting closer and closer to the start of the NBA season. Until then, everybody, be safe.